The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
Welcome to Thought Crime Radio. This is Janelle in the studio, downtown Columbia, Missouri, with Kurth and our guest, Bill Wickersham.
Right.
Take it away, Kurth.
Kurth from Earth. All right. Max Planck, who originated quantum theory, once said that a new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it. And that seems to apply to the issue of UFOs. The people that are being born today are a new generation that will grow up with an awareness that the extraterrestrial phenomena, the UFO phenomena, is real. Most of us grew up in a world where we were told that anybody that believed in UFOs was a crackpot and it was all a bunch of nonsense. But that world is changing. There's been some very prominent people who have come forward and talked about this reality. And we have Bill with us here today. He's aware of the cover-ups. And to relate to this to the state of Missouri, in 1941, between Sikeston and Cape Girardeau, there was a UFO crash. You hear about that?
Yes. A woman by the name of Charlotte Mann told the story about her grandfather. His name was William Huffman, who was a Baptist minister at the Red Star Baptist Church in that area. And one night he was called out in 1941 and viewed a crashed saucer, UFO saucer, with three occupants, and it was his job to say the prayer over those folks, and they were buried there in the area.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story, and the thing that makes it interesting is I've heard that the records for 1941 have disappeared with the fire department, the police department, the sheriff's department, and some aeronautic, I think it was the Institute of Aeronautics records for 1941 also just magically disappeared.
Well, I'm kind of wondering, aren't you from that area?
Well, I went to college in Cape Girardeau, and so many years ago. It's a beautiful little river town, and you hear the stories of it, which none of us took serious back when we were college students in our 20s. We just thought, but now it looks like we may have had our own Roswell in Missouri all those years ago.
The first UFO researcher to really research that was Leo Stringfield, who was working at that time in Ohio with the U.S. Air Force, identifying UFOs, et cetera. He picked that up. And there's a gentleman now, I think still in Virginia, who's still very interested in that, but it really needs to be further researched. I'm sure there's still some older people alive that could probably talk about that a bit.
Yeah, there is, I believe, someone named Linda who has a website called www.seekingmoinfo.com. And who's trying to research that, and but the story seems to end there. I mean, unlike Roswell, there was no nationwide declaration. I think I've heard that some newspapers' records for that time period are also missing.
Well, that's not unusual in this field, but as you know, we've had two very good UFO sightings in Columbia. One in 1973, a man by the name of Richards, who lived down around Road WW, south of Columbia.
Right.
There actually was a saucer which knocked down part of the trees, actually landed, and while all this was happening, he was on 911 and also with Federal Aviation, and these folks documented what he said, that he was a rational guy. And then J. Allen Hynek, who was Project Blue Book's scientific advisor for the Air Force, came out of a couple of days later and actually did the report. And folks can get that online by just Googling Columbia UFO sighting 1973.
Right, and that's just another one of the fascinating stories from our own area. And this previously on Thought Crime Radio, we've talked about the history of cover-ups of all kinds and many different subjects, you know, obstetrics, 9/11 truth, and what's happening with the Fed and the economy. But we've also talked about the history of UFO cover-ups, how Project Blue Book under a man named Rupel took UFO sightings seriously, and then the CIA got involved and it became a cover-up.
I'm not sure they were ever serious, Kurt. I talked with Hynek at Southern Illinois University in the late 70s. Essentially what he told us, they had columns on their reports. You had swamp gas, you had crazy people, you had the North Star, you had misidentified meteors, et cetera, et cetera.
Weather balloons.
But 20% they could not identify, and rather than include that in the report, they gave it to special ops teams, which then went out and really investigated what went on. And my friend Dan, he's not a close friend, but an acquaintance, Dan Sheehan, in Washington, actually had access to those data at the Madison Building in 1977.
Wow. And so what they had is a system of cover-up, but when they would find something real, then they would have to actually investigate it themselves.
That's correct.
Right. And in a sense, and you know, although generally I'm opposed to government cover-ups, in a sense I can understand this one because I think that they don't want to create a sense of panic in the public because, for example, I'm sure a lot of people remember the story about Orson Welles' hoax where he did War of the Worlds on the radio and people thought it was real and were jumping out of windows.
Correct.
Something like six people died. And so they're being careful about how they release this information, but we're approaching a time where more and more people need to understand this, and I think you think that more and more academics need to take this seriously.
Well, let's go back for a minute, though, about the cover-ups. A man, a historian, UFO historian by the name of Grant Cameron, who's a Canadian, but who has really accessed the Freedom of Information files in this country at the various libraries, et cetera. He has done a wonderful piece on 65 reasons for the cover-up. The first of being, as you suggest, when you don't know what's going on. If you were General Twining in those days, and you have, and it's your job to protect the airspace of the United States, and you're having these objects, as they did in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C.,
right.
I mean, massive sightings. You're not going to admit you don't know what it's about.
True.
Then it goes on from there. As I say, there are at least 65. There are political, economic, a whole lot of reasons, and religious reasons in some cases.
Right. But more and more as we approach a time when we have to start openly dealing this, it makes sense that at least educated people start figuring out what is going on and getting involved in studying this. And KOPN in Columbia is really a great place to talk about this issue because it's one of the more educated places in the country, the 13th most educated municipal area in the country, and this is a good time and place to be talking about this.
Well, as you'll remember, Galileo tried to get the church fathers to look through the telescope. many of them wouldn't do it, and unfortunately, there has been a gigantic default on this academically. There are a lot of reasons, ridicule, disinformation, fear. I talked with an academic friend not too long ago who told me one of the reasons he doesn't deal with this is because it's in the tabloids. Well, the Robertson panel, CIA panel, in 1953 established a program of disinformation. You had to admit they existed, but what is it we can do to make it look silly? And so a lot of folks still buy that.
That's true, and it's one of the biggest psyops that's gone on, and it's still going on, and they've done a great job of making anybody who takes it seriously look silly. But one thing we've talked about in this show is there are so many areas, important areas, things having to do with obstetrics and 9/11 truth and the economy that people have to start dealing with, whether even if the mass media isn't dealing it, even if the government isn't talking about And in this particular case, I think there are people in the government who are wanting some of this information to come out to the academics. You were talking earlier with me about somebody in the Air Force has admitted to having plans for what would happen if there was extraterrestrial invasion.
Yes, on Easter Sunday, this past Easter,
mm-hmm.
Professor Paul Springer. Springer is a professor at the Command and Staff College at Maxwell Air Force Base, part of the U.S. Air Force's university programs to train majors and light colonels who are on their way up, okay?
All right.
He was given permission, and so stated on a program in an interview with an Australian talk show, wonderful. In fact, you can just, if you Google Paul Springer UFO DVD, you'll see him give this. And what he essentially said is that the Air Force does have a very elaborate contingency plan for alien invasion. Now, that raises some real important issues, and we'll
right.
get into that in a minute.
True. I mean, if the Air Force is preparing for the possibility of alien invasion and at the same time keeping the public in ignorance of the existence, this is a recipe for panic if they announce it. And people just aren't emotionally ready for it.
What's so unusual about this? I have a friend by the name of Dr. Carol Rosin,
mm-hmm.
R-O-S-I-N. Once again, you can Google her UFOs. Carol worked for a man who was not my favorite guy, Wernher von Braun. But she worked for Wernher von Braun the last 2 years of his life. And the one good thing that he really did do, because he was involved in this, for 2 years he told Carol, first, they will use the communists as a reason for the military-industrial complex perpetual warfare system. Then it will be terrorists. It will be this and that. The ultimate will be the ETs. Do not let them use that as a false flag operation to raise more money for things like the Star Wars program and the warfare state. So that's a possibility. The other possibility is that, in fact, it is inoculation, embargo leakage, if you will, to help condition us slowly to the real deal.
Right. Yeah, there is a lot of concern among certain people who have studied government corruption and what's going on that one day the government will announce, ET invasion, then tell everybody to go off to the FEMA camps, and then it's, you know, becomes a method for shutting down society or dealing with avoiding riots if the economy collapses, things of this sort. It's, but the thing is that the history of the UFO phenomena is such that it doesn't seem feasible that they've gone back into history and back into time and created all this evidence. There's a lot of people who think that we've had contacts with extraterrestrials going back until ancient times.
Yes.
And some people believe that, in fact, our species was, to some degree, genetically engineered by extraterrestrials. And although these are very controversial theories, there is certainly a lot to say to the effect that there may have been contact with extraterrestrials in ancient times, and so it doesn't seem feasible that this is all just a cover-up, a psyop that's going to be used for some type of government takeover. I mean, there is a real phenomena here that needs to be dealt with.
Well, the list is so long. Stephen Greer, in his book Disclosure, quotes 80 different people who are either pilots, general officers, other officers, government officials. He has a total of 500 people who are willing to testify under oath. 500.
Right.
If we could have some congressional hearings on this. But unfortunately, that's not in the cards right now.
Right. I mean, here's just a couple of quotes. One from Mikhail Gorbachev, Nobel Peace Prize winner and former leader of the Soviet Union. He said, "The phenomena of UFOs does exist, and it must be treated seriously." And Paul Hellyer, a former Canadian Minister of Defense, said, "UFOs are as real as the airplanes that fly over your head." And, Jimmy Carter admitted before he became president that he saw a UFO. Truman said that if UFOs exist, that they are of extraterrestrial origins. Ronald Reagan said that the threat of UFO invasion could cause us to put our differences aside as nations and become unified. It's hard to think that this is just a big hoax that people are putting on when you have that kind of widespread, announcement of this is a real phenomena, including police officers, astronauts, and people like that admitting that this is all real.
See, why it's difficult, and I go back to the Robertson Report, they really found ways to discredit. They will take some truth and then make it so outlandish and put it in the National Enquirer. Then academics and others say, well, we can't pay any attention to that. It's in the tabloids.
Right.
Well, the fact is there are so many people. I'll give you one example.
Sure.
I wrote a piece for the Missourian, mm-hmm. just a letter to the editor. Lee Spiegel of AOLnews.com picked it up. It went viral. All I was asking for were congressional hearings. Now, the big shots, and I'm not one, in the field, the real leaders, have been crying out for this forever. What I did in the article, also, in one article, was to show Robert Hastings' work on Minuteman missile shutdowns of the actual. That's happened over and over. Well,
yeah.
Captain Salas, who was one of the guys at Malmstrom Air Force Base in '67, called me and explained the whole deal. There was a saucer above his launch control center. It shut down at least 10 missiles. And but what happens is you'll have debunkers who then turn around and make that look silly.
Right, yeah. There's been a number of reports of how UFO sightings have influenced, during the Cold War, influenced what was happening on a very high level with the Pentagon and people involved in that. And it's hard to make something like that look silly since, we were on the brink of nuclear war. But, this is a matter of pacifying the general public. And I suppose, what I would like to see happen isn't so much trying to wake up everybody to this issue, but to wake up people who are willing to educate themselves or who are well-educated and just study it more, because we're coming to a time when we're going to have a generation of people to whom this is going to be a real phenomena. And when that happens, then the old world that we were living in, the little small world view that we had, is going to be destroyed, and there's going to be a new world view, where we think of ourselves more as citizens of the galaxy rather than just citizens of the world. And that generation is coming up. These are the people who are being born right now. We've talked a lot about, on this show about how to treat birth differently, how to treat child raising differently. And one of those things is this generation, that's being born now, is going to have a different view of how we deal with the issue of extraterrestrials and UFOs.
One way that will occur is if educational institutions, universities, colleges, community colleges, really address the problem. Dr. Peter Sturrock, who's a world-renowned astrophysicist at Stanford, has done extensive research on this, and he says the only way we will ever get to the bottom of it is if university faculty, administrators, students, and others take it on. I mean, let's face it. If this is true, and I believe it is, that there are folks visiting, it's the biggest story in the history of humankind.
Right.
If we have mass psychosis and people who claim to be abducted, if there have been 6 to 8 million people estimated, if we have mass psychosis, that's a very researchable problem
right.
for sociologists, political scientists, and psychologists.
Right. Whether this is real or not, it's still the biggest story in the history of the world in some ways. I mean, it'd be more remarkable if it wasn't real.
True.
And, yeah, and even people who didn't believe in the phenomena, like Carl Sagan, had to admit that, something is going on.
You know what happened to Carl? I had the good fortune to meet him,
mm-hmm.
served on a audience panel in 1983 on the Ted Koppel show on the Day After movie. So he was one of my heroes in the nuclear disarmament thing, but apparently Carl did not tell the truth about this. Paola Harris, who is a very well-known UFO researcher, respected person,
uh-huh.
worked with J. Allen Hynek when he started his center in the Center for UFO Studies in Chicago.
Right.
She had a conversation with Hynek in which Hynek said, yes, Carl and I were on the Johnny Carson show. We were in the green room, And after all the testimony which Sagan gave over and over to congressional committees, he said, Alan, I know the UFOs are real. I just couldn't sacrifice my funding, meaning his academic research funding.
Well, yeah, that makes sense, too. I mean, and that's a phenomenon that a lot of people in power face. I mean, if you admit that the UFO phenomenon is real, then your career as a journalist is over, your career as a politician is over, your career as a corporate leader is over. You know, if you want to stay credible, you can't admit to these truths.
Or you can be an old guy like me and an embarrassment to some of your colleagues. But I want folks to do is really take a look.
Right. Yeah, I think that's most important. And I think that we have some public service announcements we want to make, right?
Sure. We want to let people know that you're listening to 89.5 Columbia, and this is Thought Crime Radio. Are you going to want people to call in?
Yeah, we'll give out the number in a second. And I have a question for you, Janelle, about speaking of public service announcements.
Mm-hmm.
Your movie, The Other Side of the Glass, is right. That going to be at Ragtag Theater?
Nope, it's going to be at the Holiday Inn Expo Center on May 19th.
Okay, the Holiday Inn Expo Center at May 19th. And what
Two showings, 4 o'clock and 7:30.
Okay,
I might even have popcorn.
Okay, 4 o'clock and 7:30.
Right.
And
but I'm going to do an announcement to bring up here.
Sure.
Yep.
A lot of people are interested in and would like to know that. And how long is that movie? How long is the movie?
It's not the entire movie. The entire movie is about 3 hours. It's a series, so this is just a part of it.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's something for us to look forward to.
Yep. For sure.
And
TheOtherSideOfTheGlass.com.
Right. And the Voluntary Action Center's 11th Annual Spring into Action fundraiser will be held on Tuesday, May 22nd at the University Club. The dinner will feature an auction as well as honoring deserving award winners. And you can get more information at area code 573, and the phone number is 874-2273. And on volunteering, individuals, families, and groups who seek volunteer opportunities can find help on the web at vacmo.org, where Volunteers Find Your Opportunity has everything you need to get started. VAC has developed the Helping Hand catalog as well, which lists more than 200 volunteer opportunities. One or more copies at no cost are available from the VAC office at 874-2273.
And I would like to let people know that the Missouri River Cultural Conservancy, MORIVCC, is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to document, record, archive, and foster awareness of the unique history and culture of the Central Missouri River region. The Missouri River Cultural Conservancy, MORIVCC, works within the community to acquire equipment, train operators, record live events, collect donated materials, catalog and archive the video recordings of the artistic and cultural activities that make the region unique. They are always looking for recording opportunities and volunteers. For more information or to get involved, call Mike Cooper at their office, 573-657-1019, or on the web at www.morivcc.org. So do you want to let people know that 443-8255 is the number to call if you would like to ask Bill Wickersham about
UFOs,
anything? I was pretty... Carl Sagan, I loved Carl Sagan when I was a young person and watched him on Johnny Carson and Tom Snyder and Koppel's show.
I think this shows you how difficult this topic is.
It's really difficult.
Right.
But like I've said on here before, you know, if there's not some other intelligence out there, we're really screwed. Because we're not doing a good job here.
Right.
I mean, in terms of taking care of humans and, I don't know.
Right, and to let me people know also, on from May 4th to May 7th, KOPN is going to have its spring fundraising drive. And to remind you that KOPN is one of the few news outlets that will talk about issues like UFOs and other topics that are taboo to so many other people. And we operate on a shoestring budget. We're run by volunteers, and any help you can give us during that time or any time would be really appreciated. There's a website where you can make donations, kopn.org. So anyway, that's just something we wanted to let you know. And
443-8255 if you'd like to call in.
Right, we'd like to know what you think. In the past, when we've talked about this subject, we've gotten all kinds of calls, including some people who don't think it's a real phenomena. I remember one man said that this was a bunch of poppycock. But we always like hearing what people in the community have to say.
Yep. And that's why we have Bill up here. I like to give people in the community here an opportunity to come up here and speak their truth.
I think when you and I first talked, we didn't know each other, but
not at all.
I made the point, and it's the point I'd like to make that just reinforces what you just said about KOPN. I have a movie, Out of the Blue, which is a very expensive, produced by James Fox, which has Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, Gordon Cooper, scientist, the governor of Arizona on the Phoenix Lights. Wonderful film.
Yeah,
we showed it at Ragtag. I had 13 people come, and maybe we didn't do a good job of advertising that film. And you can see it right online by just googling Out of the Blue UFO DVD. Be sure you put that on it, because there's a band also called Out of the Blue. But my point is, in terms of presentations, groups where I speak on every other topic. In fact, when I write emails to people on this, trying to stimulate some people to work on it, they don't even answer these. Friends don't answer.
I mean, right.
And so, you know, it's Bill with his nutcase, the UFO thing. But that's why I'm so grateful to be able to speak.
Right. This is one of those taboo subjects that many people just don't want to deal with. There's a level of denial here.
In the field, we call it the giggle factor. Oftentimes, I was with a world top journalist not a couple years ago. When I mentioned this, his eyes rolled, his face perked up. It was like I had thrown something into the punch bowl, you know.
Right. And if you want to be taken seriously, as we've said, this is a topic you avoid, like fluoride and water and 9/11 truth and other things of that sort. But I do get more and more of a sense that there are people in the military and military intelligence who want this topic to be come a little more widespread in the public. You find more and more people who have come forward, you know, to talk about it. Some of the most serious UFO researchers have been former NASA people and former Air Force people.
Right. Well, Leslie Keene has a wonderful book, which is being read by some book groups, by the way, here in Columbia.
Uh-huh.
And it's called UFOs, Generals, Pilots, Government Officials Go on the Record. And she is a top-notch journalist, and that book, it goes to exactly what you said, the kind of credible military witnesses, both from this country and other countries.
Right.
What happens to these guys and women when they, I was using guys generically, trying not to, what happens when they, when...
That's
when
a problem. In the very early, right between 48 and 52, the military developed a thing called JNAP 146. That's Joint Navy Army Publication 146. When you sighted a UFO at Malmstrom Air Force Base or at Warren or anywhere else, and you're a military person, you had to sign an article, a letter saying you would not disclose, and if you did, you go to jail for 10 years, $10,000 fine, loss of benefits, and there is some evidence that some people had sub rosa threats to family. Now, Captain Salas, whom I mentioned earlier, the UFO guy, he told me he's willing to go before God, the world, Congress, But what we need for those guys is to have the Congress allow them to do it without that punishment. That's what happens.
Right.
Well, I know that we're silenced, any of us at our jobs, because even like for me, working in human services with women and children, you're expected to do what the organization needs to keep their bricks and mortars and their funding. And so there's all this undercurrent of you have to go along or else. And I'm sure at that level, losing your job, losing your status, lots of threats.
I lost the GM-15 job, my first application at the government, 160 candidates. I was selected. That's the bird colonel rating entering the government, which means you're going to do pretty well later on. And when my FBI file, which was, I'm sure, looked at when they do the background check,
right.
That's when I was told, Bill, you don't have the job.
Yeah.
And I have nothing in there except First Amendment rights, speech, freedom of speech issues. But the 30-page file, that will get you. I understand that. I'm a big boy. I understood the risk going into that. But that tells you something about conformity and how you have to be under the thumb of folks who don't want you to talk.
I actually have a colleague who has a PhD in public health, and she also, like me, believes in the sentience of the baby and has books and websites out about helping women to be empowered, and she lost a job in D.C. that had to do with maternal child and health because her websites were a conflict of interest.
And most institutions, and I work, I'm a retired government employee, 15 years I've worked, but you have what some people call paradigm paralysis or tunnel vision or hardening of the categories. Anything that's outside that paradigm, those borders.
Right.
That's kind of what I was talking about. Oh. And if you don't play.
That's right.
Whether you're a CPS worker or a teacher, you, if you don't play within those boundaries, then you don't get to play. You don't get to collect your money and provide to your family.
That's right.
Right.
And we've had several people. Zelensky was on here.
Right.
James Prescott, who in the 80s. Actually did all this profound research that shows, that follows up Harlow and some others about the mother-baby attachment and how important that is.
Right.
And his research got squelched. And these are people who end up, a lot of them living in poverty and being sort of classified as quacks.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know all about that.
And all those stereotypes, too, like, you know, the peace people are the long hair with the tie-dye stereotype.
Yeah.
And then the people who believe in the UFOs, there's a stereotype that society tries to put over them. And from looking at you, you don't fit that at all.
Well, I learned that long ago. When we were doing peace demonstrations here in the 70s, I wore a coat and tie to hunger strikes because I knew that the authorities are less likely to hit a straight-looking guy on the head.
They might think you're just somebody that walked along and you weren't really part of it.
Right.
Oh, we have a caller.
All right.
All right. Hello, caller. You are on the air.
Hello. I was just wondering if Mr. Wickersham happens to know what happened to the research that Mr. Bigelow out in Las Vegas claimed he was going to put together and publish. I think the Journal of Scientific Exploration or some such as that. And nothing has come of that I have seen. He bought a lot of material from people like John Carpenter, and yet nothing has seen the light of day. And I wonder if that is in fact true, if you know that.
You know, I don't. And I'm going to have to Google. How do you spell Bigelow?
B-I-G-E-L-O-W.
I don't know that episode or that situation. When I go home tonight, I'll take a look. But I'm sorry, I really don't know.
Can you tell us about it?
Well, this gentleman is a big wheel in Vegas. He's the guy that's got spacecraft orbiting. The Genesis vehicles that are actually in orbit.
Oh, wow.
He was going to get behind all of this back during the Roswell 50th anniversary. Put a lot of money into buying material from people. He claimed he was going to revolutionize all of this. And I was very suspicious of him to start with, and in my opinion, vindicated in that he has collected all this material, and yet it simply has disappeared. The Missouri connection is this guy, John Carpenter, who's a psychologist from Springfield. Bigelow bought all of his research, all of it, and it has never seen the light of day. That's more than 10 years ago.
So
if you haven't heard about it either, it hasn't happened.
Right.
So one of the things that happens, and I've seen this, is that the good evidence material, it simply disappears.
Let me give you a story.
That's true.
What's your name, sir?
Val.
Val, let me give you an example. In 1979, I believe it was, or 8, J. Allen Hynek, who was the U.S. Air Force's top research person on Project Blue Book, came to Southern Illinois University. He told us about Project Blue Book. It started when? Around 52, quit in 69. During that period, they had various categories, of course, of UFO sightings. One might be crazy people. Another would be North Star. Another would be meteors. And Hynek, as I'm sure you know, talked about swamp gas. What he told us that day and reaffirmed in books later, 20% of the sightings they could not account for, therefore they just did not record them. They took them clear off the books, then gave special ops teams the data to go out and check them out. So that's the way they bury, and that may be what happened here with Bigelow, too.
Well, it almost seems that as though, you know, it's very unfortunate, almost sinister. You could see it from some angles. In that, if you go down, we've been at this game. I mean, I've been interested in it since the 1960s. Mm-hmm. The ball has not been moved down the field, and every time it looks like something's going to happen, someone shows up, some series of events occurs, and everything is stopped, stonewalled again. And
Val, let me give you another story that. I'm sure you've heard of Danny Sheehan. Dan Sheehan was head of the Christic Institute. He was Karen Silkwood's lawyer, Daniel Ellsberg's lawyer. He's a heavy hitter in Washington, Harvard PhD and lawyer. When he, in 1977, he was approached by the Congressional Research Service to do a study of the best available information on UFOs. And the woman he worked with was a woman by the name of, and I'm blocking on her name now, but at any rate, he actually got access, if you can believe this, to the Madison Building to see Project Blue Book's materials that they had hidden from the public. So this it's for, you know, that for me, I know there's a cover-up. You talk about anything else we want to talk about, I can assure anybody in the audience that this has been deeply covered.
And it's ongoing, so, you know, the basic problem is here, if you don't have a need to know, you're not going to know. And whatever this is, you know, whatever it's doing, is continuing apace, and apparently with the acquiescence of the people in charge here.
Had you heard of the Paul Springer episode on Easter Sunday? August was
No, I don't believe so, no.
Did you hear that when I explained it earlier here? Paul Springer is a professor from the Maxwell Air Force Base who was given permission, apparently, by his superiors to indicate that the Air Force and the Pentagon have a project to counter alien invasion.
Okay, right. I have read about that. Yes.
Yeah. Now, that, as I was saying earlier, that gives us two options. One, it's a false flag operation, which allows the government then to say we need more money for Star Wars, space weapons, et cetera, et cetera. Or it could be another case of inoculation, trying to get folks, you'd think after 60 years we were used to it, but probably not. But this is one of the most, I talked to some friends who formerly worked on this in D.C. They think it's a big deal, and none of the major newspapers published anything about this. None.
Right. Now, that is pretty much the pattern. So I guess it's sort of like global warming. We better hope that it's all for a joke, because if it isn't, nothing is going to be done about either one of these things. So it's a case of, you know, prayer, I think, is the call for.
Yeah,
well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
If you'd like to call in, the number is 443-TALK, 8255, 443-8255, here on KOPN 89.5, Thought Crime Radio. We're talking to Bill Wickersham and Kurth.
Yeah, Kurth from Earth. And, you know, one thing is that...
Got another caller.
Okay, let's hear from him.
Or her. Hi, caller. Hi. You are on the air.
Hi. I would like to know, I'm not familiar at all with the UFO phenomenon, and it's of interest to me, but I would like to know where's a good place to start as far as, is there a good book that is sensible and
yes.
readable that I could go to?
There are three things I would recommend to you. First, before I bought the books, I would Google Out of the Blue UFO DVD YouTube. Okay, that's first place, because you'll get more than you want to know the first day on that. Secondly, Dr. Stephen Greer, M.D., that's S-T-E-V-E-N, Greer, G-R-E-E-R, has a book called Disclosure, which has 80 folks.
Okay, we need for you to turn your radio down, because I'm getting an echo.
Sorry.
That's okay.
All right.
It's all right.
So Stephen Greer's book, Disclosure, and thirdly, Leslie Keene, L-E-S-L-I-E-K-E-A-N, Leslie Keene, who has a book called UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. That'd be a good place to start. Now, none of this deals much with abductions, per se, but just the UFO phenomenon.
And do you have a website or a blog where you post those?
No, I do not.
Okay.
I've got no.
So maybe, Kurth, you could put those on the website, thoughtcrimeradio.net.
Yeah, we may put those references there. We'll see what's happening with the people that are working on that. And
want to repeat those.
If you're living in Columbia too, Columbia Library does actually have a decent selection of books and some DVDs.
Because I think that's
on the UFO phenomena.
A really good question.
Yes.
So if you could repeat the three
things. The first would be simply Google Out of the Blue UFO DVD YouTube, and you need to do it that way, because if you just do Out of the Blue, you'll get a band. There's a rock band. Mm-hmm. Okay. Secondly, the book Disclosure by Stephen Greer, S-T-E-V-E-N-G-R-E-E-R. And by the way, you can also just Google the Disclosure Project, and you'll get a lot of what we're talking about here online. The Disclosure Project. And thirdly, Leslie Keene, who is an independent journalist who wrote a seminal article in the Boston Globe, got a lot of attention. Her book is called UFOs, Generals, Pilots, Government Officials Go on the Record. Those are three I would start with.
Sounds good.
All right, well, thanks so much for calling in.
I think he's gone, but if anybody else wants to call in, it's 443-8255. And so, if there are other people like me who are listening and don't quite get what you're saying, is there sort of a gist or a nugget about what this is about? You're saying that the government, there's something going on with other beings or other planets, or that they know about, that, like...
Well, the situation is that for many, many years, certainly since 1947, some dates back to 1897 in the modern era, there have been devices, flying devices, I don't know if you call them flying, but moving devices, called unidentified flying objects, which have cut corners, used aerodynamics that nothing like the U.S. or Soviet Union or Russia or anybody else has had. Those have been there, okay? We see them, you see them, I mean, just millions, really.
Well, aren't there some in old paintings?
Well, but let's go through this first, and we'll go back to that, okay?
All right.
So we can get the whole deal. Some nations have studied this. Brazil, Denmark, Britain, Canada, and especially the French. The French have a report. You can look this up online, the Cometa Report. C-O-M-E-T-A, Cometa Report. They took, I don't know how many it was. It was in the hundreds, though, of the best available sightings they could find. They had two generals on it, the head of their police force. They had their NASA director and a whole host of engineers and scientists who did this study. Their conclusion was, at the 90% level of confidence, that some of these UFOs, not all, but probably most are not, but some are of extraterrestrial origin. In other words, the extraterrestrial hypothesis was assured by them, or they say at the 90% level. Edgar Mitchell, our astronaut, says it's even higher than that. So first off, you've got UFOs. You've got the belief that these are folks from wherever, somewhere in the universe or universes, somebody's galaxy, maybe our own. So you have that. There are literally thousands of people who claim to have been abducted. My friend Leo Sprinkle, who used to be my tennis doubles partner right here in Columbia, we were in graduate school at the time, did the seminal work on regression and hypnosis, etc., which is a tricky business, admittedly. But he tested people on the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, which was one of the big tests in those days, right, to show whether you're crazy or not or whatever. There's no significant difference.
If you were artistic, you could show up crazy on that, though.
Well, by and large, there was no significant difference in people who had claimed to have been abducted, okay? Now, Leo ended up getting fired, by the way, over his work. John Mack, listen to this one. John Mack, who is professor, he's died now, was professor of psychiatry at Harvard. He was a Pulitzer Prize winner, one of the most published people, and had been chair of the department. When he picked up Leo's work and did 100 or more, several more, abduction researches, interviews, et cetera, with folks, published it, they tried to fire him at Harvard. My friend Danny Sheehan had to defend him, and of course they did, but that shows you how loaded this thing, a man of his stature. And he wasn't saying he knew the answer. He was trying to search for the answer.
Do you know Alex Collier?
I know the name. Who? Tell us.
He's just a person that's pretty well known, and people can Google that too. Alex,
on UFOs?
Alex Collier. He's actually had a long-time relationship with some extraterrestrials, and people either love him or they don't, but from 1990, there's an old video from 1994. He happens to be one of the fathers in my film. So because of him being in the film, when people Google it, I had to actually close down my comments on my YouTube because I had put up a little short of his interview. He's a father of three children born at home. And people kept coming on there and saying the most bizarre, mean, cruel things, and he's actually gone underground for a while just because of all of the threats. And
Dr. James McDonald at the University of Arizona back in the 60s, world-renowned astronomer, got so much grief, he eventually did himself in. Now, you never know why a person does himself in, but he got enough grief. And some folks, you know, that happened to another guy by the name of Paul Benowitz, and others who've been in this field.
Well, and sometimes some of those aren't even suicides, I understand.
Yeah. That's true, too.
At some point, when you can't even feed yourself, you can't get a job because you're so ostracized.
Right. It's like the story of Prometheus. You know, he brings fire down from the heavens and it angers the gods, and so they nail him up on a rock. But eventually Atlas, who holds up the world, had to let him go because he did the right thing. And the people who are talking about this stuff are like Prometheus, bringing fire down from the heavens to enlighten people. And I think that we should mention, too, there's a spiritual aspect to all of this.
I was just going to ask that, too. I mean, this brings... What you guys were saying, I was wondering about in this society that's mostly Christian, how it's not biblical. And so, but you had something to say about spirituality.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that it isn't in alignment with what Christ was teaching. I mean,
But not in churchianity.
Right. It goes against a lot of theology of traditional Christianity. But
churchianity,
right.
In 1994, there was a poll done of rabbis and ministers, Christian ministers and rabbis, sort of across the board. And what they found was that about 28% of the folks, and these would be your very fundamental Christians, would have great difficulty. That was almost 82 million people. So right off, you've got a problem with disclosure if it's done, you know, just in one fell swoop, because you've got to have a lot of folks who are sort of disjointed, challenge of beliefs, behavior, attitudes, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to say one other thing to the audience out there. In dealing with this topic, there are three basic types of people. There are the debunkers who say it can't be, therefore it isn't. There are the genuine skeptics who are right, and I'm a skeptic in many areas of this myself. Uh-huh. And then there are the believers who have looked at data who believe it. But the debunkers are the people we have a lot of problem with, because they won't look at your data.
Right. Some people who call themselves skeptics are actually not truly skeptical in the broadest meaning of the word. I mean, because you have to consider all possibilities. And from a scientific point of view, the truth is the people who think something's going on have a lot more data than those who are denying it.
That's right.
We have a caller, babe. I had a caller, but it was on the other line, so I'm hoping he's going to be able to call in.
Okay, maybe.
It's 443-8255. There he is.
All right.
Had a good point. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
How'd you know it was me?
ESP.
I'm sorry.
I would argue about UFOs not being biblical.
All right.
And if you read your Tower of Babel story, or even angels themselves, angels who were sort of extraterrestrial beings of light.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying you think that actually the UFO phenomena is in harmony with the Bible, is that correct?
I do, in fact, yes.
I have some family members who are very fundamental who would not accept that as an answer.
Well, even the Catholic Church, not too long ago, the Pope said that there was not really a conflict.
Oh, by all means. In fact,
their beliefs and the possibility of life in the universe, other places.
Okay.
And Monsignor Corrado Balducci was the Vatican's man on that. He died. And my friend Danny Sheehan, that I mentioned earlier, had direct connection to the Vatican when he was doing that research in 1977. He tried to get the information. The Vatican has one of the largest repositories of UFO information of any group on Earth, literally.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let him have it at the time. And then there was all over a period of 20 years of complete turnabout. And right now, there have not been any papal statements, but there have been people of lower levels saying, yes, the space folks are probably our brothers and sisters. Now, that's speculation, but at least they're open to it.
Right.
Interesting.
But if you read the Tower of Babel, the people on Earth were building a tower that would get into heaven, and there was someone up in space, I don't know if God or whatever, talking to himself or to some other one, saying that if they do this, then they'll be able to reach into the heavens, and they basically destroyed the tower.
Yeah, I think a lot of the imagery really makes sense once you start to understand the extraterrestrial and UFO phenomena.
So, I think there's really not a conflict there.
Yeah. Take a look at Ezekiel. Ezekiel saw the wheel.
Right.
Ezekiel's
wheel, this wheel.
Yeah, also. In the sky. Wheels in the sky.
Zechariah Sitchin, who was one of the world's best linguists who could read the cuneiform tablets, saw lots of references historically. That's what you were talking about. And also cave drawings.
Well, Zechariah Sitchin, that's his big thing. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he's from the Jewish. He's a Jewish rabbi, I believe, but he, in his studies of some of the Sumerian texts, he's got a whole theory about how the Book of Genesis is basically a tale of the extraterrestrials' interaction on Earth.
The Anunnaki.
Right. This is truly the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Well, I've read what do they call them? Those tracts that Christians take out. I saw one done by pagans to give to Christians and then come to your door. And it said that God was plural, that there were many gods, and this was a god that created this garden. And that would be sort of in alignment with the extraterrestrial kind of perspective.
Well, everyone has a leader, I suppose, if you follow the leader line back far enough.
Yeah.
Yep, and so we're running out of time again. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Right.
The Tech Radio people are up at 6 o'clock. This is Thought Crime Radio, and we have Bill Wickersham with us. And we are going to do a UFO show the fifth Monday of the month. Sometimes a month we'll have five Mondays, which gives us that extra show.
That extra show to talk about the UFO.
We should have you back because it sounds like you have a lot of information.
Yeah, this has been great. A revelation.
It's just one of those things people have to expand their mind and
and
do the research.
Just see the movie Out of the Blue, for starters.
Right, and the word apocalypse doesn't mean destruction, it means revelation. And this is the time of the apocalypse, the revealing of the great truths.
That's interesting, I didn't know that.
Right.
Because that's not what we think.
No, it's displayed as a time when the world is destroyed, but it's really just our worldview that's going to be destroyed when the truth is revealed.